Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Bravo star Andy Cohen and comedian Michelle Buteau are among those advocating for New York to adopt a law allowing paid gestational surrogacy. But pockets of opposition remain. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt explains.
Assembly sponsor Amy Paulin and Senate sponsor Brad Hoylman hosted a panel that featured Cohen and Buteau, who each have had to leave the state to have children through surrogacy. Cohen says as a gay man, he was drawn to New York because he could live his life openly. He says it seems wrong that he had to go out of state when it came time to find a surrogate to have a child. He chose California, where paid surrogacy is legal, and he had a son, Benjamin, early in 2019.
I would like to give a brother or sister to Benjamin, and I would like to do it in New York State. And so that's one of the reasons that I was here. One of the best relationships in my life has been with my surrogate. She is all heart, as I think you will find all surrogates are. They are here for the greater good of providing the gift of giving a family to those who cannot have one on their own.
Buteau says she has a medical condition that causes her body to reject a pregnancy. After years of trying in vitro fertilization and 4 miscarriages, she decided to try surrogacy and was surprised to learn that it was illegal in New York.
I felt like, God, my body rejected me, and now my home state has rejected me.
With financial help from her parents, she and her husband found a surrogate in Pennsylvania, where the practice is legal. She is now the mother of twins. Others who backed the measure include women who are cancer survivors and became infertile due to their treatments. Afterward, Cohen said he's spending the day getting the message out during meetings with lawmakers. The Senate passed the measure last year. It's also backed by Governor Andrew Cuomo, who announced the start of a campaign to help get the bill passed. There is some resistance, though, in the Democratic-led state assembly, where some lawmakers are uncomfortable with the idea. Cohen says the bill, as crafted, assuages some of those concerns, and it could be an example to other states on how to do it right.
We need them to understand that this bill will be a bellwether to for other states in terms of surrogates' rights and protecting surrogates. The relationship between parents and surrogates is very special. It's misunderstood. But when you hear the stories of the women that I'm here with today, you will appreciate it.
But opponents say allowing paid surrogacy in New York could open the door to exploitation of women. Taina Bien-Ameh is the executive director of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women. She says if the bill becomes law, New York could become a center for reproductive tourism.
You can just imagine if a trafficker or an abuser has the power and control and the easy money of implanting someone else's embryos in their prey, in their victim, in the people under whom he has control, then, you know, we're really unleashing a Handmaid's Tale type of situation that is not science fiction.
Bien-Ameh says she supports what's known as altruistic surrogacy, which she likens to organ donation, where no money changes hands between donors and recipients. But she says the surrogacy arrangements need to be more closely regulated by the state to protect everyone involved.
New York should actually develop a registry, just like we have for organ donation, so that there are ethics in place and protections in place.
Supporters say the bill does include protections for women, known as the Surrogates Bill of Rights, which includes legal and medical protections. Other opponents include the Catholic Church, which says in an opposition bill memo that it treats children as commodities to be manufactured, bought, and sold. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartalk. Alan, this week you spoke with Governor Cuomo several times. He told you he planned to propose to the president that the state could share some driving records with federal immigration agencies if the administration reverses its move to block state residents from global entry and other programs that allow travelers to avoid long border security lines.
Will the president compromise with Andrew Cuomo on this? I doubt it very much. And I don't think Cuomo thinks the president's going to do it. I think he thinks he has to try because, you know, WAMC represents a good deal of the area where people have to go into Canada all the time and do business with them because they are our largest trading partner. But this is a president who does seem to believe in revenge, and New York basically turned its thumbs down on him, and he moved to Florida, and the governor knows it. But the governor, I think, is in a situation where he literally has to try.
He's made no secret about his friendship with the former Vice President Joe Biden. You asked him about the results in New Hampshire as a leading Democrat in the country and about Biden's poor showing. He says, hang on a minute, those states do not America make, and that we need to see more here.
Well, I tried to get him to say what I think he means, but, you know, he's being very cautious. Obviously, he knows as a Democrat, a leading Democrat, and if Trump wins, my sense of it is that Andrew Cuomo will run for president, or at least sees himself doing that in 24, a long way off. So he has to be very careful about his motives and about what he's saying.
Well, we've seen the proposals before, more recently in Vermont, four women legislators introducing this, and legislators in New York State have now reintroduced past measures in the state Senate and Assembly to decriminalize prostitution. The legislators, all from New York City, would maintain laws that relate to trafficking and consent and expunge the prior convictions of individuals prosecuted for sex work.
Look, we all know that prostitution is probably the oldest of all criminal behavior. And now, quite correctly, there's a question as to whether or not people should be held responsible for it. You know, sociologically, we do know that people marry for reasons that will involve money. So I'm not saying what ought to happen here, but I suspect this is something that sooner or later will happen. We did it with people who smoke marijuana. We're going to do it now with people who sell themselves. It's something I would rather not see happening, but it just does seem like something when we're trying to reduce the number of inmates, when we're trying to reduce the people who are being prosecuted and take the strain off the courts, it's something that makes an awful lot of sense to me.
Well, you mentioned marijuana. The governor keeps saying, put it in the budget, put it in the budget. You pushed him on this. No, you could get the speaker to do it. You could get legislators to do this. No, they all have their districts. They have to run on issues, and many, especially on Long Island, don't want it.
Well, not only do people on Long Island not want it, I'm not so sure he wants it. You know, he said in the beginning that he was opposed to it. Then he changed his mind. Now he's putting it in the budget. I think this is such a strong governor, and he objects when I say this, but this is such a strong governor that he has his way with these people in both the Assembly and the Senate. I don't think they're giving him a hard time, and I don't think they say no to him. They may say no initially, but in the end, if he presses hard enough, he gets it, which he is not doing in this case. He is putting it in the budget. Now, in order to understand why he's doing that, if in fact he means business, is that the one thing that George Pataki did, he went to court and he proved that the budget is the governor's proposal. And if it's in the budget, it passes in a way it might not if you had to pass a separate law. That's the way it is. That's what he's arguing. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. Maybe he wants marijuana legalization and maybe he doesn't.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In his budget, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is proposing merging the state's Thruway Authority with the Bridge Authority. Several Hudson Valley lawmakers are opposing the idea and are protective of the Bridge Authority. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
Speaking with WAMC's Alan Shartok last week, Cuomo explained why he favors such a merger.
Savings, efficiency, economies of scale, two agencies doing the same thing. Why do we have two agencies, two heads, two cars, two offices, two Xerox machines, two of everything? Why not save the taxpayer money, do it better, do it faster, do it more efficiently?
The New York State Bridge Authority oversees five Hudson River bridges: the Bear Mountain, Newburgh Beacon, Mid-Hudson, Kingston-Rhinecliff, and Rip Van Winkle. Democratic State Senator James Skoufis represents the 39th District.
I have serious concerns about merging the Bridge Authority with the Thruway Authority. You pay $1.25, $1.50 to travel over these mid-Hudson bridges, and that's pretty rare nowadays where you can travel over a bridge for that kind of a toll. And I have reservations that the motivation here is to use the Mid-Hudson bridges, which are doing quite well. Their balance sheets are positive, to subsidize the Thruway Authority expenses. And I'm not going to go along with that. And, you know, that's one place I'm going to be pushing back quite significantly.
Cash tolls for regular vehicles on Bridge Authority bridges are $1.50, with proposed increases to $1.75 in May, staying this rate in 2021, going to $2 in May 2022 and $2.15 in 2023. The current EasyPass discount of $1.25 would rise 10 cents each year through 2023. Republican State Assemblyman Colin Schmidt opposes a merger.
My constituents and residents of the area, people who work in my district, who commute across these bridges, are concerned about it, and they do not want the Bridge Authority to be absorbed into the larger Thruway Authority. The focus will be fully lost, and I just stress the proposal will harm commuters by increasing toll rates, and no doubt that toll rates will increase if this merger occurs, and it will shift the focus and budget allocations away from bridge maintenance and operations to other areas not connected with the Bridge Authority's current work.
Schmidt's 99th District includes part of Orange County and a town in Rockland, and the Bridge Authority cites a large project, redecking of the north span of the Newburgh Beacon Bridge, as a major reason for the need to increase tolls. Meantime, Democratic State Senator David Carlucci, who represents the 38th district that includes the Rockland side of the Thruway-operated Mario Cuomo Bridge, says such a merger makes sense.
For a long time, I've called for consolidating our authorities, and I think it's where we need to go. We have the Bridge Authority, the Thruway Authority, the Metropolitan Transit Authority, the Port Authority. The list goes on and on. So we need to do what we can to consolidate our transportation infrastructure, to consolidate it, to make sure that the focus is on having the most efficient, most cost-effective infrastructure in the nation.
Again, Cuomo.
They're doing the same basic thing. You're running the thruway, you're running roads, you're running bridges, you're doing maintenance, you're clearing snow, you're setting tolls. Why not consolidate like functions to reduce the cost? Flip side is, well, people who now have the Bridge Authority want the separate authority because they feel it is closer to them or whatever the rationale.
It has been 10 years since the last toll increase took effect on the Thruway. The last toll hikes on Bridge Authority bridges took effect in 2012.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
At least four candidates are seeking to represent New York's 45th State Senate District next year after Republican Betty Little retires. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Betty Little has served in the State Senate since 2003, and her 45th district is the largest in the state, covering Warren, Clinton, Essex, and Franklin counties, and parts of St. Lawrence and Washington counties. When she announced she would retire in December, Republican Assemblyman Dan Steck threw his hat in the race. He spoke to WAMC at the time.
I am a North Country guy, and I've got the passion to do it. I think that I have something that I can contribute to try to maybe slow some of the direction that New York City is tending to bring us. And so when Senator Little said she was retiring, you know, I just felt like I had a role to play to help in the Senate.
Steck's 114th Assembly District is located in the southern part of the 45th Senate District. A former Queensbury town supervisor, he was first elected to the Assembly in 2012. Steck knocks the current state government, controlled entirely by Democrats.
In good economic times, we've got a $6 billion hole to fill this year. We're going to have to make some hard decisions, and we can't keep saying yes to everything because our $176 billion state budget is only going to balloon from there.
Two candidates are seeking to run against Steck in a Republican primary. Carmen Bogle is the mayor of the village of Cambridge in Washington County, first elected in 2015. Bogle highlights her career in village government and also her experience working part-time for Republican Jake Ashby, who represents New York's 107th Assembly District.
I think coming into this with the local government perspective will be extremely helpful. Because local government, they are in the trenches of government.
Among her priorities, Bogle is focused on mandate relief. With the budget season underway, much of the conversation in Albany has focused on Medicaid. Municipal leaders across the state are concerned about potential increases in their Medicaid payments to close the state budget gap, while at the same time remaining under a tax cap.
So one year I was only allowed to increase the levy by $6,000. But when you have mandates come down that, you know, pretty much eat away that, you start looking at your budget and trying to process, well, how are we going to still provide the basic services that we do and meet these demands?
Also seeking the Republican nomination is Kevin Beery, a retired English teacher from Colton in St. Lawrence County.
I think, you know, I can bring a fresh perspective to Albany because, you know, I'm not a politician.
Beery calls himself a conservative Republican with traditional values. His focus is on development in the Adirondack region.
I think the area could be developed for tourism, wellness tourism especially, which is tourism associated with fitness and health.
Beery has strong views on New York's party system. He wants to abolish so-called fusion voting, which allows minor parties to cross-endorse candidates. He blamed fusion voting for his loss in a run for county legislator 2 years ago, saying his Democratic opponent was also on the Working Families and Conservative Party lines, endorsements he characterized as conflicting.
So if I do get elected to the Senate, I would definitely introduce a bill to abolish fusion voting.
Also in the running is Kimberly Davis, who has served as Clinton County Treasurer since 2014.
We need a moderate Democrat in the state Senate representing our area because I can have those conversations with our downstate friends. You know, my opponent might be able to say, I'm going to defend your rights, but if he doesn't have a voice or he doesn't have a seat at the table, how much is he really going to be able to do?
Davis, a Democrat, declared her candidacy in May 2019, well before Senator Little announced her retirement in the traditionally Republican district. Like her potential opponents, Bogle and Steck, Davis is also focused on mandate relief. She says she would also represent the district's rural values and prioritize fiscal responsibility.
To me, it's acting in much of a bipartisan manner as possible. Not judging something on a bill on who is bringing in front of me, a Republican or a Democrat, but how are we going to pay for that?
State Senate primary elections are June 23rd.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Siena College Research Institute has released its 13th annual New York Business Leaders Survey. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look.
The poll samples state and federal business climates. CEOs surveyed say while their confidence is lower than last year, more than half don't see a recession on the horizon. Siena College Research Institute Director Don Levy.
They feel as though it's getting progressively more difficult for these CEOs who work in manufacturing, wholesale and distribution, various service industries, technology. It's getting just more and more difficult for them to be profitable. When we ask them a simple question, are things better off in the New York State economy today than they were 6 months ago, the same or worse? Only 17%, that's down from close to 30% a year ago, say that things are improving.
Two-thirds of upstate CEOs identify health care costs as a challenge.
They see costs continuing to go up, and as yet they haven't seen a solution. When we ask them a question specific to New York State, would you support or oppose a single-payer system here in New York State, overwhelmingly, 3-1, oppose single-payer.
Only 6% of business leaders say the state is doing an excellent or good job of creating a business climate in which companies like theirs will succeed. They tell Siena they're challenged by taxes, the cost of health care, and government regulation. 59% rate their local area as only fair or poor on workforce suitability.
It's been 6 years since we asked this whole battery of questions in which CEOs assess the suitability and job readiness of applicants. But it is down from where it's been. You know, right now, in the capital region, one-third of all CEOs, 34%, say that they plan to hire people this year. They are looking for people. You know, that's a strong figure. But when we ask them about how suitable the workforce is, nearly 60% say that the grade of the workforce suitability is no better than fair or poor. And only 17% here in the capital region, fewer than one of five, say that, yes, there's an ample supply of job applicants, workforce, who are ready to step in and contribute day one. It actually gets a little bit more suspect than that. We asked them about things like the people that are coming in to get a job. Do they have the requisite technical skills? Do they have the requisite verbal skills? What about their work ethic? And while a little bit more than a third say that the workforce has the requisite technical skills, when you get to things like work ethic, that's less than 30% of CEOs who give the job applicants they're seeing a grade of excellent or good.
And when it comes to CEOs' expectations for 2020?
They believe that the economy is going to be tougher. They do not think that we're moving into a recession, but they're going to be hiring if they can. They believe that revenues will be up. They believe that profits will be relatively constant. And they're going to focus on doing the business of business, you know, expanding the demand for their product and services and seeking to overcome what they see as the problems that are generated through state government. So business will take place. It will be a good year for some. When we analyze all the responses that they give us and we characterize all the CEOs that we speak to as either optimistic, pessimistic, or staying even, the single largest group say, I'm holding my own. I'm staying even.
There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
It's 1980 in Lake Placid. A cauldron is lit, and from February 13th to 24th, more than 1,000 athletes from 37 countries compete in 38 events during the second Winter Olympics held in the village. Eric Heiden makes Olympic history, winning 5 individual gold medals in speed skating. The games feature ice skaters Scott Hamilton, Robin Cousins, and Ty Babylonia. And of course, the Miracle on Ice stunned even the winning players. 4 decades later, Lake Placid and the Olympic Regional Development Authority are marking the 40th anniversary celebration of the 1980 Games. ORTA spokesman John Lundeen tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley who we can expect from the 1980 Games to be at the celebration.
It's hard to believe that when I say the names of some of these athletes who are coming back, that, you know, we still remember them so fondly. Buzz Schneider, who was a member of the Miracle on Ice hockey team, will be here. He scored that first goal against the Soviets. Others who will be here will be Scott Hamilton. He won the gold medal in men's figure skating in 1984. But he carried the Olympic flag during the opening ceremonies here in Lake Placid. Charlie Tickner was a bronze medalist in men's figure skating. He's going to come back for the first time in 40 years. Linda Frontignani, who is the women's singles figure skater silver medalist for the United States, is also coming back for the first time in 40 years. Kitty Carruthers, Ty Babylonia, both were pairs figure skaters during the games. They'll be back. And also coming to Lake Placid with his Olympic connection is speed skater Dan Jansen, who you may remember as a 4-time Olympian. He captured the Olympic championship in 1994. So we're excited to have all of these athletes and Olympians here.
How many of the 1980 athletes have actually maintained ties to Lake Placid? Because you mentioned a few are coming back for the first time in 40 years, but some of them have come back time and time again.
You think about the 1980 Olympic hockey team. They've come back here on a number of occasions. Of course, each year we have the Miracle on Ice Fantasy Camp, which draws them back time and time again. They also participate in various events that ORTA helps to organize. So they're back here quite a bit, and Buzz Schneider is back here, you know, often. Scott Hamilton, he was really the leader of Stars on Ice, and he has come back to the Lake Placid community on several different occasions, while others are coming back for the first time. It was last year that we had Eric Heiden back in Lake Placid for the first time since he won the 5 Olympic medals in speed skating. So there is a connection that these athletes have to Lake Placid, but at the same time, it's exciting to see these athletes come back for the first time in 40 years, and they'll be able to share those memories and relive those moments that they had here.
For the athletes that haven't been back, has it been difficult to convince them to return?
You know, no, not really. It's just it's been time. It's been commitment to coming back to Lake Placid. After the games, many of those athletes went on to compete at the professional ranks or went on to continue to compete at the international ranks as well. And then, you know, time kind of slipped past them, if you will. It's been a fast 40 years. So they're still connected. We've always maintained at least some type of connection with them. And now it's an opportunity where they feel as though we've got to come back to Lake Placid to be a part of the 40th anniversary. It happens only once, and they feel like they need to be a part of it.
So we're talking about the athletes coming back. What kinds of things can the average person during this time frame expect to be able to see and do?
Well, there will be on the 17th, which is going to be very exciting. We're going to have a special presentation with Olympic athletes from the past, the present, and the future at the Lake Placid Center for the Arts. And it's going to be a moderated discussion. The public's also invited to participate in the discussion as well. We're going to have various fun zones at Mids Park in Lake Placid. We're also going to have a trivia night that will focus on the 1980 Olympic Winter Games. And then the venues that were a part of the 1980 Games are still in operation. So we invite you to come out and create your own Olympic memories, whether it's a bobsled ride on our combined track or ski white base or Mount Van Hovenberg. So there is so much for people to see and do during this two-week celebration. It's really exciting to see everybody come together and make this event happen, not only for Lake Placid, but for everybody who's going to come and visit and be a part of this.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2007. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.